Welcome to Sex Positive Families, where parents, caring adults, and advocates come to grow and learn about sexual health in a supportive community. I'm your host and the founder of SPF, Melissa Carnegie. Join me and special guests as we dive into the art of sex positive parenting. Together, we will shake the shame and trash the taboos to strengthen sexual health talks with the children in our lives. Thank you so much for joining us. Hello, families. Today's episode is all about communication strategies when talking with our children and teens. For this one, I had to bring on Noelle Ward, founder of Life Skills for College, as well as the award-winning Life Labs. These are two programs that teach young people life skills for success. Noelle is a licensed occupational therapist who has been teaching life skills for the past 19 years to diverse individuals of all ages and abilities. She is also the director of rehabilitation for a large home health and hospice organization where she is responsible for the therapy programs and quality of physical therapy, occupational therapy, and speech therapy throughout the state of Alabama. Alongside her profession, she is married with two kids, so she knows a bit about this parenting thing. Noelle is breaking down verbal and nonverbal communication, offering actionable strategies for parents and caring adults as they support sexual health talks with the children in their lives. This episode is packed with helpful tips, so let's get to it. Noelle, how are you?
I'm great, thanks. How are you, Melissa?
I am doing really well. So let's get started with, tell us a little bit about your journey towards the work that you're doing.
Yeah, great. Well, I'm an occupational therapist by background, and I have been working in leadership roles the majority of my career for about 20 years. I noticed over the past, about the past 10 years, I was working with a great deal of new graduates, college students, and high school students in the workforce. And I was noticing I was mentoring and coaching them a great deal because they didn't have the life skills they needed to navigate not only the workforce, but even just their life in general. Mm. And I was seeing this on a regular basis. And actually, I was seeing people that were not happy in their current role in life or in work. And that a lot of times I would blame it on their situation, but it wasn't their situation. It was because they didn't know how to navigate their situations, and especially with communication, which we'll be talking about today.
Yeah.
And so anyway, I saw this and I thought, we really need to have a stronger workforce, and our young people really deserve to have these skills and to be set up for success. And we really need to start cultivating that at a much younger age. And that's kind of how I came to start this business and this journey, so I could serve teens and their families and help them gather those skills for success.
That's an amazing cause. I can certainly say, as the parent of an 18-year-old, a freshman in college, this whole need for them to be prepared for adulting, it is a specific set of skills that we need to be preparing them for. So when I originally came across your work and the way that you just package so well visually and both in the written word, these nuggets of knowledge and the different tools and resources that you offer to families, I wish I'd found you sooner when she was a junior and a senior, because it's a lot of preparation.
It really is. And thank you for saying so. And there is, and there's so much in the high school years, you're just trying to get them through their schoolwork and get them into college and doing college applications and scholarships and all those other things. And they're usually already busy in their social life. It is a lot to take in. And so, we're trying to provide easy resources for families to be able to navigate through that.
Well, you are hitting it out of the park.
Like you said, adulting, that's what it's all about.
Yeah, you're hitting it out of the park. And then you also are a parent, is that correct?
That is correct. I do have two children. I have one that is eight, and one that is 10. The nine-year-old turns 10 in a couple weeks.
Right. I always have to calibrate myself to all of the children's ages, because it's like they don't turn a new age at the same time. That would be so helpful. Not for the pocketbook for birthday parties, though, but tell us a little bit about the difference between verbal and nonverbal communication and what parents should be aware of when they are looking to foster some awareness around that with their young people.
Yes, definitely. So verbal communication are the words that we use, and then the nonverbal communication is pretty much everything else. From body language to our tone of voice and the inflection that we use in our speech, to even our space, like how close we stand to somebody. Because, you know, if you're standing really close to somebody, you could be trying to intimidate them. Right. Or you may say, I'm very comfortable around you. So, you know, facial expressions, tone of voice, body language, all of those things. And we believe the nonverbals more so than the verbals, but our words only make up 7% of communication. Mm. So that means 93% of what we communicate is done nonverbally.
That's huge.
Yes, it is really big. And so I think that's something that's really important to talk about with our kids, because kids are really good at expressing themselves with nonverbal cues, but they're not as good at reading the nonverbal cues. And that's part of just where their brain is developmentally. Right. So it's helpful for us parents to be able to read those cues, but it's also helpful for the kids to learn, you know, what are they really saying with their nonverbals. For example, the eye roll. We've all seen the eye roll. You know, and the eye roll is a sign of either boredom, but it's usually a sign of disrespect. Mm. And so, you know, we know what they're saying. So, for example, when my kids do that, you know, I say, you know, okay, that's really disrespectful, and that's what you're saying right now. Mm-hmm. So being able to address those nonverbals is critical as parents, but it's important to teach our children what they're really saying with their nonverbals.
Right. And so what I heard in that example was you are modeling in that moment, you're modeling for them how to point out that nonverbal, how to bring attention to that nonverbal so that then it becomes something that you both can discuss, or, you know, that could be that moment where you can gauge whether you're reading the nonverbals correctly. Is that accurate?
Exactly right. That's right. Because we can misinterpret the nonverbals, and we do want to make sure that what we're interpreting is what the message they're trying to send. And it's really critical for teens and children, because this is where a lot of the drama comes into play. Mm. You know, they're communicating with the nonverbals between each other because they don't know how to articulate what their feelings are, or they're scared to articulate because they're afraid they're going to hurt the other person's feelings. Right. And so they start to act and communicate with nonverbal cues.
What's coming to mind for me is that parents, as the mentors and as highest influencers, there is some responsibility there in us modeling that. And so if we are in, just as we go about our life and our children are observing us, and whether that's in our own relationships, if we're in partnered scenarios or marriage scenarios, and they're observing how we're communicating and whether we're truly being authentic and showing up and addressing these kinds of things, modeling seems to be a big component, right?
Yes, it's huge. So I do this a lot with my children. When they say one thing, but their nonverbals say something else, or they're not, like I was talking to my daughter the other day, and I could tell that she was ready for the conversation. It was a conversation she wanted to end. And so I said, you know, well, based on, you know, how you're positioned, you know, your knees are at your chin, your arms are around your knees, you're not looking at me, I'm getting the feeling you're ready to end this conversation. And so by pointing out what I'm seeing, so then I teach them to do the same thing. For example, if I say, I'm not mad at you, you know, clearly you don't believe me, because if my arms are crossed and I'm not looking at you and I'm using that tone, even though my words say I'm not mad at you, everything else about what I'm communicating says that I am. And for children, it's really hard. It's like, how do we address it if that's not the words they're using? Right. And so, you know, what I teach my children to do, and what I'm, like you said, I model for them, is I say, you know, you say you're not mad at me, but you won't look at me. You've been ignoring me. And that's the part I believe. And, you know, I thought we were friends. Can we talk about that?
Yeah. Oh, I like that.
So having those conversations, and I do that a lot with my children, you know. You say you're okay or you're fine, but your body language, you're kind of humped over where you're not engaged in conversation and you keep looking down. It doesn't look like you're okay. And it looks like you may not want to be ready to talk about it yet, but I want you to know that when you're ready, I'm here to listen.
Great. I love that. That last piece that you said is so important, and especially in terms of sex positive parenting and when we try to approach sexual health discussions, is that remembering that it doesn't all need to happen right now and right away to the, you know, forcing the conversations. And so I love that you point out that, you know, when you're ready, I'm here.
Yeah. So, and sometimes I think they're still processing it. They're not ready to talk about it yet because they haven't quite processed it in their own mind to know what to talk about yet.
Yes. What advice do you have, or How might you support your child? Because this can feel like confrontation, right? Like if you're bringing these things up, and not everyone is comfortable in something that feels like conflict or feels like confrontation. How do you suggest supporting people or getting people maybe to reframe that?
You know, basically, I'm trying to teach assertive skills. And assertive feels aggressive when you're first learning how to do it. And so using a lot of I statements, you know, here's what I feel right now. Is this true? Or, you know, you might say, here's what I'm trying to say, and I'm not sure I'm saying it right. Can you kind of explain it back to me to make sure that I'm doing a good job?
Right.
Or I feel like I might have hurt your feelings based on what I see right now. Is that true? So that's usually a good place for kids to start, because if they point back to themselves, they're usually much more comfortable with it.
I love that.
Yeah, so that's a starting point. And then they start to build their confidence. Later on, you are having these conversations and addressing things. It may not be as direct. It may say, you know, you say you're mad at me, but it doesn't feel like, or you say you're not mad at me, but it doesn't feel like that's true.
Mm-hmm.
You know, are you sure you're not mad at me?
Right.
And that's kind of how it starts. And then you start to build into a point where you can be much more direct about the facts and what you're seeing and ask for more engagement.
Yes. These are such important and great skills that definitely, you know, I'm thinking about our adult relationships, you know, and our work relationships and our friendships and our intimate relationships. These are skills, right, that we need to be applying to all relationships. And it just hasn't happened. Those skills just haven't happened for all of us. And so I think a lot of parents are having to calibrate to this new way of relating to our children that isn't so much about like a power dynamic, right?
Mm-hmm.
It's about, right. It's about that respectful and honest communication.
Well, I think in relationships, especially, I mean, even in your early adulthood, you know, there's often the times where you're going to get the silent treatment.
Mm.
And the silent treatment is a way of communicating. It is a way of communicating, but it's not a way of moving forward. And so you have to be able to, if you're in the relationship getting the silent treatment, whether that's a friendship or romantic interest, you really have to be able to bring that up and say, and address it. Say, you know, I feel like I'm getting the silent treatment here. Could you please let me know what I've done so we can talk about this? And again, it might be one of those things to say, it seems like you're upset with me and maybe you don't want to talk about it right now, but I really would like to talk about it if and when you're ready.
Yes. When in the context of sexual health discussions, when a parent may be feeling a little anxious already about the subject matter, or maybe feeling a little awkward or less comfortable, what suggestions do you have for how they can maybe step into that discussion or that interaction with more confidence, and especially as they're seeking to create a space of openness where their children will feel comfortable in the interaction?
Sure. And I think it is a struggle. It's something that I continue to work through. So I think one way to go about it is, again, giving them space to say, look, I'm not going to force this down your throat. We're going to talk about it. And really try to cultivate their curiosity, because oftentimes they really do want to know, but they're just uncomfortable or not sure how to have that dialogue. And often, like you said, the adult may be uncomfortable too. And again, we're sending nonverbals saying, gosh, I'm a little uncomfortable with this conversation. How do we proceed? So a couple of suggestions is, one, to watch their body language. And as you're having these conversations, look for signs that they're starting to get uncomfortable, and then back up and shift to a different point of safety. I'll give you an example. When my son was 8, we were having conversations about sex and changing bodies and things of that nature.
Mm-hmm.
And at one point, he started to kind of shut down and started to look uncomfortable. And I thought, okay, something has changed here, and he is no longer comfortable with this conversation. And so I started to ask a few questions. I said, but now it seems like you're a little bit more uncomfortable. Can you help me understand?
Mm.
And it turned out we had started looking through a book, and in the book, it had a cartoon of a naked adult woman and male in the corner. And he was really, it was so distracting to him. He couldn't hear anything else, and he didn't like that picture.
Oh, gotcha.
And so, yeah, so once we figured that out, I said, okay, well, if we close the book and let's put the book away, are you comfortable continuing the discussion, or do you feel like we need to stop? And he said, well, as long as we're not looking at the book, we can keep talking.
Yeah.
So being able to watch for those cues and then adjust accordingly is really helpful. And then other times it's like, okay, you know what? I think we've had enough of this conversation. Now we're starting to tune me out, or we're starting to look so uncomfortable that we can't hear the message.
Right.
Or whatever it is. Okay, you know what? Let's come back to this later. And I have found that just doing little bits at a time for us has been very successful.
I love that example in terms of our younger children. What thoughts or what suggestions do you have when we're talking about our teens or young adults? And especially if, because I know we have some listeners who are just getting acquainted with sex positive parenting, and mm-hmm. their children are a little older, and yes. they didn't start those conversations early. We can't go back, right? We can't go back in time and,
right.
and change right. that. So now that our children may be older and their unique communication patterns, you know, are at play,
yeah.
and they may already have a good bit of knowledge that they've picked up from the world around them about sex and sexuality and the body. And so now we're coming to them, you know, looking to engage,
yeah.
you know, what advice do you have, again, from the context of these communication strategies for that parent who's feeling like, oh, I might have waited a little bit too long, but I do want to have these conversations. I don't want it to be off-putting. What do you suggest there?
So I have found that the most effective way to broach those conversations is by sharing stories.
Mm.
And it can be a story of your own, or it could be something that you see like on a TV show or on the news and say, you know, here's something that came up, you know, and especially if you're watching TV together, but even if you're not watching TV together. And so I was watching this the other day, and here's the scenario that happened and how they handled it. And I think I would have done it a little differently. You know, what do you think you would have done? And that starts a very comfortable, safe conversation that can then start to go into the next phase. Like, it could be a story about relationships, or it could be a story about, you know, a romantic interest. And so if you just kind of start and jump in abruptly
mm-hmm.
with, okay, let's get straight to the sex talk,
mm-hmm.
they'll shut down on you.
Yeah.
So you've got to kind of warm them up and get up into that conversation in another way that's maybe a more safe way related to just relationships in general.
Absolutely. I love yeah. that. And using the world around you is what I hear also in that, right?
Yes, absolutely. Use examples from the world around you, from the news, from whatever Netflix show they're binging on right,
right
now. Or, you know, and then again, then even then, once you say, this is what I, you know, you see in the world or whatever, and then give a specific example of maybe something that you've experienced
right.
that was similar to that, because that makes you more vulnerable and
mm.
makes them, that puts down their guard. Because once they know that you have been through it, or that you can ask some of those questions, or that you're, once you show that you're comfortable talking about those things, they're more comfortable asking.
Yes. Oh, I love this. I'm just eating this up so much. Here we talk in the context of, you know, sexuality and sexual health, but these are skills. These are just communication skills, and they can be applied across all aspects of just relationships and relating from one individual to another. So
absolutely.
It's folks that are having some trepidation or, you know, discomfort. These are some just core skills that have nothing to do with sex, that if you can apply them and or be conscious, and it's practice, right? You just have
right.
to practice them, and you can practice them in your everyday other scenarios. Then you just then can insert a little bit of that sex, the angle of sexual health and, you know, sex content. But the core, at the core, is just about how we relate to others, right?
That's exactly right.
So we've lately, right, as a culture, in our American culture in particular, because we have folks listening from all over, but in our American culture, we recently have experienced an awakening, right, with
yes.
The Me Too movement, and where the importance of communication and in the context of consent is coming to light. So, you know, what does that mean, you know, to you in terms of this framework of teaching communication strategies and around consent?
Yes. Okay, so back to the concept of, we believe the nonverbals over our words. And nonverbal communication is 93% of what we communicate, and our words are only 7%. That's an important concept to realize, because that's how we communicate in general. And so when people say, oh, well, she said no, but she meant yes, that's why they think that, because they're reading nonverbals. Now, that doesn't mean they're reading the nonverbals correctly. You know, we often when, for example, we might have a crush on somebody and we're looking for the nonverbal cues to support what we want. We want them to be interested in us too. Mm-hmm. So sometimes we just look for what we want to see and we ignore the rest. And so that is why it's so critical that we do teach our kids how to use their words to clearly articulate their needs. No means no. That's very empowering, because even if someone else is interpreting my nonverbal communication to say something else, you know, the no means no. So we do need to be teaching all of our children to say no, but also how to articulate their other needs. Mm-hmm. And when you talk about their other needs, you know, this is for teens, it's really hard because they're still exploring. They don't always know what their boundaries are, because they are exploring and pushing their boundaries.
Right.
So they might have certain things like, okay, well, I'm not going to have sex, but oral sex I'm not as sure about, you know, I'm comfortable kissing this person, but that's it. They have to first have a feel of what their boundaries are in order to articulate those boundaries.
Exactly.
And that's where the dialogue with the parents is really helpful, because it just kind of helps give them a framework of, you know, you kind of need to think of these things in advance when you can, because if you don't, when you get in those situations, it's a lot more fuzzy and gray. And that's where we tend to get ourselves into trouble. You can't state your needs if you don't know what your boundaries are.
I hear in this that truth that if parents are wrestling with their comfort level of having the open and candid conversations about sex with their young people, then we are missing out on that opportunity to have that planning, those planning discussions, and to allow them the space to explore what their real needs are in that present moment. You know, there are a lot of parents who may feel intimidated by that or afraid or uncomfortable to hear what those might be, maybe making assumptions about what those might be. But I'm hearing that you're saying we absolutely need to find the way to allow for space, because in that is the opportunity for us to have influence in terms of helping them with their decision-making and critical thinking before they get into these situations.
That's right. One thing that can be really helpful and a way to start those conversations with our children as well is just think about, you know, having the conversation of, well, what do you want your first kiss to look like? Or the first time you are intimate with somebody, or the first time you do have intercourse with somebody, what do you want that to look like? Let's talk through that, because you really want them to have a good experience when that happens.
Exactly.
And if they are with a partner who's maybe much more experienced than they are, that can be there can be a power struggle there.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you might want to say, you know, you don't want to be intoxicated when this happens. You know, sometimes that can give you some liquid courage, but you also might regret things the next day and you might not make the same decisions. You can talk about, you know, how to build up and make that first time, whatever that first, you know, whether the kiss or just getting intimate with somebody, what it should look like in order to make it a good experience.
Oh,
because that's a lot more of a safe place for parents to start those conversations.
We want to help prepare them for success. And like a lot of your work does, you know, focus on in terms of adulting with all of these other skills, right? Like this is another skill. This is another life skill. And unfortunately, our culture, and the American culture in particular, has been more sex negative. And so it's like it's siloed. It's siloed and made this whole topic of sex and anything that may remotely have anything to do with it or be connected with it unsafe or foreign or sexualized. And so therefore it feels again like there's this huge wall and we don't want to cross over it. And it's not like this is a rite of passage. Like we're not, you know, it's not like, okay, now that you're 18, you know, you can go off and have all the sex that you want and it's going to be wonderful and perfect. Or just like, I think you brought up in one of your posts about marriage, right? Like how well are we preparing our children for the success in these pieces of their life that have to do with intimate relationships and intimacy?
Right. We spend a lot more time focusing on the wedding day. Like we'll spend an entire year planning for the wedding day, but not spend a lot of time teaching them how to be in a relationship and what that looks like. And part of it's because we weren't taught that, or we don't know how to articulate that in the language to frame that.
Exactly. Exactly.
Yeah.
How would you define sex positivity, and how does it show up in your life?
Sure. Well, I think that sex positivity is being able to discuss sex, being open about it, and being open about intimacy, and not being fearful of it. It is something that it is something that is pleasurable, mm-hmm. and I don't want my children to grow up being scared of it.
Right.
And so there is that balance of, you know, I also don't want them to explore things too early, but I do want them to enjoy it. It is something, you know, I have too many friends that have grown up thinking that it was a bad thing. So even as adults, they don't enjoy their sex life. And mm-hmm. I find that to be so sad.
Right.
And I grew up in a family where we talked about everything.
Mm.
And it was very empowering for me. And actually, I found that I was much later to explore, because I felt like I had a lot of my questions answered and I was very comfortable and didn't feel like I needed to figure those things out on my own.
Right.
And so versus my other friends who got no coaching of any kind, they explored much earlier than I did. I also find, for example, when I was in college, we were 19 and I had a friend who got married in college, and she grew up in a very conservative home and had been saving herself for marriage, but had really even never been intimate with her fiance, hardly in any way at all. And she was even uncomfortable just being in lingerie in front of him.
Oh my. Yeah.
And I thought, oh, that is so sad. Like, how are you going to enjoy any of this if you can't even be comfortable clothed in front of your soon-to-be husband?
Wow.
And then, you know, so the girls, we all kind of talked about, well, and try to set expectations for that first night. Here's how to enjoy that first day, because, you know, the penetration itself may not be the part you enjoy.
Mm-hmm.
And we gave her some lubricant and explained, you know, enjoy the intimacy, enjoy the kissing of the neck and all those other components that are pleasurable.
Right.
And then a few months later, she kept complaining that she kept going to the doctor because she had urinary tract infections.
Mm.
And she didn't understand why. And she kept saying, why do I keep, I never had UTIs before and now I have them all the time. And so, you know, I explained to her why that was happening and how to prevent that. And she said, how did you know that? I said, well, my mom told me.
Mm-hmm.
And she said, well, why didn't my mom ever tell me? And so I want to be sure that I've prepared my children to know what, to be able to ask questions and to understand their bodies and to explore with pleasure, and just be able to enjoy it when the time comes.
That is beautiful. I'm excited for your children.
Thank you.
I'm excited for their futures because it is. It's so empowering to be able to prepare them in these ways and to know that you're setting up that relationship for a lifetime. And so as they move through life and through their journey, and even as you move through yours, because as adults, you know, our journey through sexual health is going to shift and change. And how awesome to be able to have the openness in your communication and your relationship with your young people. And as you both move through life, you really have like a mentor relationship that's supportive and that's available. And how much safer, like you said, they tend to then understand, oh, wow, this is a lot of responsibility. And I'm going to decide when I really feel ready for that versus, I don't know what I'm getting myself into. It sure looks exciting or interesting. Let me go check it out. And who knows the grab bag of scenarios that can come from that. And even not, you know, we don't even have to go to the most like darkest or unsafe thoughts. But like you said, just merely that, wow, I'm not really enjoying this and I don't know why. What do I need to be doing differently? I feel like I should be enjoying this, or I should feel comfortable with this. But again, without that space and that early preparation and that openness, it really does inhibit their possibilities when it comes to their body and how they relate to others and their sexual health.
Absolutely. And it is not easy. I grew up in that environment and I still struggle with it. Like, I'm so glad to have your podcast and to follow you on Instagram and the other things I do to watch your work, because it is very helpful and helps. Again, I think what you're doing is giving us words and ways to approach this and to articulate these needs so that we can be more comfortable. You're modeling for us how to do this, which is wonderful.
Mm. Well, thank you so much. So what projects do you have coming up? It's 2018. It's a new year. I know we're all excited about that for many, many different reasons.
Yeah.
What projects do you have coming up that we can look forward to?
Well, I'll be offering in January a communication course for teens, and it's something that is designed by college students. It's like what we asked college students. We have college students on our team, and we did a lot of research and said, what do you wish you had known, or what do you wish you knew how to do more of now that we need to be teaching high school students how to do? And so we have an online course where they can binge watch content and videos, but it also gets dripped out to their phone, because we have found more success where when it just comes to them a little bit at a time, it's easier to absorb.
Yeah.
And so we'll be offering that this month, and they can find that at www.lifeskills4college/communication.
Excellent, excellent. That is such a helpful resource. Like I said, I am like, gosh, I wish that I had found you sooner. But also, I've had some great conversations with my freshman in college about your, she's connected to your Instagram now and follows your content. And she can completely attest to the fact that it's just a pool of, you know, these young people that many, many of them have not had, you know, the type of guidance or mentorship that your services promote and, you know, provide. And so, you know, you do end up having some floundering that's happening. And so it's interesting then to see as they then get into that college space and those new opportunities and that overstimulation of independence, you know, what that can look like for those that have been prepared with these different components of life skills, and for those that, you know, are just trying to figure it out on their own.
Yes, I think floundering is a good word. You know, those who come with more prepared, they don't flounder as much, and it's easier to navigate college, even high school, you know, when they have the basic skills versus having to kind of learn it on your own while you're also learning how to live on your own and learning how to figure out college. It's just, it can be overwhelming.
Absolutely. So how can families connect with you?
The best way to connect with me is on Instagram at Life Skills for College. And again, number 4, not the word 4. That's the best place to connect. We do post on a regular basis there, and you can direct message me there at any time. And I check those regularly.
Awesome. And you have a freebie, right? If folks sign up for the email list.
I do. Now, actually, the website right now, if they go to Life Skills for College, www.lifeskills4college/communication, that actually takes you to the freebie for communication. So it's the top 10 social skills that teens need in the digital age.
And I think you come up with the most clever things. You and your team have just, you're so clever, and the fact that you utilize actual youth in helping to, you know, create the content and, you know, keep it relevant. You have this this activity, right, that has to do with grocery shopping. Can you share a little about that? Because I think that's genius.
Yes. Yeah, so when people get on the, you know, when they get a freebie, then we actually send 3 bonus gifts after that via email over the course of a week. And one of those is a selfie scavenger hunt at the grocery store.
I love that.
And it's really fun. So it's a way that, you know, teens can go to the grocery store by themselves or as a group, and they take pictures of the different things. And it kind of helps show the parents, okay, here's what we need to work on, and here's what they know. And it's everything. You know, it's not just bread and milk. It's like, how do you know how to pick the right fruit, ripe fruit? And, you know, do you know how to compare the prices based on cost per unit and things like that? So, yeah, there's many other life skills beyond communication that we discuss.
I think I could learn some things from that, too.
Yeah, well, there's several things I learned as an adult that I'm like, gosh, I wish I had known that years ago.
Right.
So, yes.
Again, I love what you're doing, and I am excited for our families to get connected to Life Skills for College, because it really just offers such a gateway of opportunities for us to connect more deeply, more purposefully with our young people so that they feel prepared, more prepared than we may have felt when we entered into this world of adulting. So Noelle, thank you so much. This has been such a rich conversation, and I am excited for families to get connected with the opportunities that you're creating.
Oh, thanks, Melissa. I appreciate it. It's been such a pleasure and an honor to be on your podcast. And I am so looking forward to every one of your podcast episodes. I think it's a fantastic thing you're offering. And I can't find anything else like it out there. This is wonderful.
Oh, thank you. Thank you so much.
If you liked this episode and podcast, please leave a review in iTunes or Google Play so more people can find us. And you can always visit us on our website at sexpositivefamilies.com. There you can shop Sex Positive swag in our online store, connect with us across our social media platforms, join our Facebook community, and learn more resources to help support sexual health in your family. Until next time, I'm Melissa Carnegie. Thank you for supporting content that strengthens sexual health talks in families.